It's time for Yes.
This is Rick Wakeman of Yes.
I'm Trevor Rabin of Yes.
Hello, I'm Chris Squire of Yes.
I'm Tony Kaye of Yes.
I'm Alan White of Yes.
I'm Steve Howe from Yes.
And I'm John Anderson of Yes. Welcome to the world premiere of our new album.
Now back in 1968, John Anderson, a diminutive singer with a distinctive falsetto voice, and Chris Squire, a veritable giant of a man who played his bass guitar like no other before him, formed a musical group they called Yes. Over the next two decades, no less than a dozen different players flowed through this entity. Then 2 years ago, four ex-Yes members, Anderson, drummer Bill Bruford, keyboardist Rick Wakeman, and guitarist Steve Howe, teamed up to make new music. Calling themselves Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe, they gave us an album of decidedly 70s-style music that instantly recalled that era of Yes music. Now, meanwhile, bass player Chris Squire, drummer Alan White, keyboard player Tony Kaye, and guitarist-vocalist Trevor Rabin, four-fifths of the group that had given us 90125 and Big Generator in the 80s, were still very much a band. So what we had in spirit, if not in name, were two Yeses. And now in 1991, thanks in part to a concert promoter and a radio disc jockey, both in Philadelphia, the eight most well-known members of Yes have united to give us the biggest, most talented Yes lineup ever. It's an extremely complex story, and over the next 90 minutes, we'll tell the tale of how the two Yes groups became one. Now, to begin, let's ask drummer Alan White to explain the status of Yes following their 1987 Big Generator album and tour.
Really, what happened was Trevor had undertaken a kind of solo deal. So Trevor Rabin went on his own kind of path for a while. And Chris and myself were rehearsing with Tony, writing new music for a new album. And then Trevor went and did a tour. So the thing just got elongated, almost up until it was in the pipeline when Trevor came back to the fold, as it were, and we were ready to record a new album. And we had a bunch of material, and we put it all together, and then Trevor got involved, and then John was away doing four or five different projects at the same time, so it was a matter of getting things together. But nothing came to the fore until maybe 6 months ago, when there was word about possibly doing this tour that's coming up.
Mm.
So that was the kind of period we went through. All the time we were writing together.
Yes, bass player Chris Squire.
Because I wasn't sure about what John was doing, I was spending my time looking around, you know, for replacements for John, or substitute, whichever way you want to put it.
That's,
you know, because, you know,
right,
he does tend to come and go. He's, yes, got a bit of a track record of that. So, and you know, and I met the guy called Billy Sherwood, a good friend of Trevor's, who I wrote some songs with. And you know, so I was working towards working him into the band, so that when Trevor finished his solo thing, we could all get back together. And then for various reasons, I think mainly because Billy got a little bit nervous, I think, about taking on the responsibility of the job, but it didn't come about.
You've probably been hearing that one for a couple of weeks now. It's called Lift Me Up, and it comes from Union, the new CD from Yes. As the song's author, Trevor Rabin, tells it, he'd become stuck on some of the lyrics for Lift Me Up, so he asked Chris Squire for a hand.
Lift Me Up was there, Lift Me Up and Turn Me Over, but there's things like Imperial Behavior and little quirkinesses that he seems to bring in every now and then, which obviously initially I said, no way, you know.
Actually, you didn't, because you actually, do you remember you came up with that line, because we just had a dictionary on the left, and we were just actually having fun with the song, and we were doing things like just opening the page and pointing a finger on the word.
That's how
you came up with Imperial.
That's right.
Do you realize what you're doing? There's people listening to this all over North America that go, so that's how they do it. Give me a dictionary quick.
Not every time. But
you know, and thereafter to defend
the story.
To defend the procedure, thereafter we make sure it says something.
Yes, we did put some words around it that qualified the meaning. Yes.
And once again, you know, lyrically in the verse, a little dark. You know, we try to make it somewhat vague as to what it's about, but one of the pictures is that it's, you know, a homeless person, and, you know, I look around, I got nowhere to stay, you know, you look me up, you look me down, the guy, you know, the guy who goes into the restaurant to use the bathroom, and they look at him, no, you can't come in here. And then he just looks to the sky, lift me up and turn me over, you know, help me out.
At about the same time Lift Me Up was being written by Trevor and Chris, and while Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe were working on their second album, famed Philadelphia concert promoter Larry Magid was formulating the idea of uniting Yes with ABWH for one big Yes tour. And it gets even more confusing, so stay with me. According to Chris Squire, he and John Anderson appeared together on a radio show last Halloween, also in Philadelphia, with DJ mainstay Ed Shockey.
And he'd heard about the idea of this tour through the Philadelphia kind of Larry Magid connection. So he kind of managed in, you know, a fairly clever way to get us both to go on the air live. And the strange thing was that while we were actually on there discussing the possible potential of this tour, I actually said to John in a live, and I said, well, you know, maybe by the time we get around to doing this tour, maybe we should be doing some tracks together so we have an album for the tour. So I don't know whether that sort of sparked off something in John that maybe gave him an idea to tell Arista that that could be an idea, but it seemed that a few months after that, Arista were pretty much needing Trevor and myself and Alan, you know, and Tony Kaye to come and help with their album.
But from the Truth Is Often Stranger Than Fiction file, Trevor Rabin says he was first approached about hooking up with ABWH long before Squire and Anderson did that radio show.
Okay, well, about a year ago, when we were still vacillating and yet not really, because we were writing pretty prolifically, really, both of us. I'm talking about Chris and myself. John was in the middle of this album. He called me about a year ago to ask whether I'd like to come and guest on the Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe album as a guitarist and maybe write a song or two. And at that time, found it a little bit of a strange thing to be doing as I was in this band, and it's like, kind of, where's the separation? If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I just found it a bit strange. And
I can imagine.
And I thought, if, you know, Steve is the guitarist of that band, that's who should be the guitarist. So I didn't do that, and that started something happening, and then a promoter started getting involved in an idea of this whole thing. Then one thing led to another, and then Chris was approached to go and do some vocals on the Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe album. And, you know, and then he thought, well, you know, maybe it could be fun. I mean, you speak for yourself on that, but he did it. And then this tour started, that kept coming up. Guys, this could be great. Can you imagine? And it was really only in, all the figures and stuff were mentioned. And it was only when we kind of realized that there's a possibility that something creative could emerge out of this that we thought, well, hang on. You know, this could be pretty amazing. And that's when it started evolving.
From Union, the brand new CD from Yes, that's called Silent Talking. Now, we've only just begun our exclusive world premiere of Union. So hang tight. We'll be right back with Yes.
Welcome back to the world premiere of Union. I'm Tony Kaye of Yes with Redbeard.
Thanks, Tony. So as the story unfolds, it's becoming more and more apparent that singer John Anderson was instrumental in getting all of his mates together in one big Yes band. As John explains, the idea first came as a result of having the unique vantage point of being the only member to have played with both Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, and Howe, and the Yes band of the 80s. Curious about that, I asked John Anderson what he learned from his experience in Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, and Howe.
I think the most important thing for me was seeing two sides of the coin. I had a 90125 big generator group which was and is an incredibly powerful unit with Alan, Chris and Trevor and Tony. And to work with Steve and Rick and Bill again, there was a lot of finesse there. And in some ways, I could say, well, I miss the heaviness of Chris and Trevor and Alan. And then when I'm with Chris and Trevor and Alan, sometimes I miss a little finesse. It's just the makeup of these musicians is extraordinary. And I was very fortunate to work with both teams. And I saw in the audience appreciation, there was a more appreciation of the musicality of ABWH. Whereas with the 90125 Big Generator, there was a really powerful rock and roll ism about the audience. They wanted to come and boogie, you know, they wanted to come and really get it together. And with ABWH, it was, I'd say, a lot more listening, tentative listening audience. So the idea was, quite simply, I wonder what it would be like putting them both together as a one unit.
For Rick Wakeman, who's back in Yes for the third time, Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe was looked upon as a separate band. That is, until they had their first contact with their fans.
The reason that we played the Yes material when we went out was the simple fact that we wrote it. You know, that collectively that it was music that we'd actually put together. When we did the very first date in Memphis, and I looked at the people and the banners and the t-shirts, they were watching another Yes. And we started playing, and I realized that in everything but name, this was a Yes. And the confusing thing was that there really was more than one Yes in actual musical terms. And I suddenly realized that if it was going to confusing me, that it certainly was going to confuse everybody else out there. I don't know quite how we would have continued as ABWH, because I think even Bill realized, and he was a great sort of avid supporter of ABWH, is a separate band. In every interview he said, we are not Yes. But in all but name, we were a Yes. I mean, and I think the most important thing to remember that a lot of people forgot is that when I say that we were a Yes, that doesn't mean to say that we were the only one. I think that there were genuinely two Yeses.
Considering the fact that there was a small degree of public acrimony between the two factions of Yes when ABWH first formed, I was curious to assess the importance of individual diplomacy in this new eight-man lineup. Here's John Anderson of Yes.
Everybody has a certain way of being diplomatic in order to work. Bill comes in and he's as witty as you wouldn't believe. The first thing he said about Tony Kaye, he said, there he is. There is that guy bowing to the mammoth of MIDI. The mammon of MIDI. He said, yeah. The Mohammed of MIDI, he called you. Because of his keyboards, right? And he's just, you know, I can't crack jokes. But I know Bill has got this style of chatter that really makes everybody feel very comfortable.
And disarming.
You know, yeah. Him and Alan are really looking at each other's, you know, warts on their fingers. Yesterday, they're all looking at the, look at this one here, say. They're both looking at each other's warts on their fingers where they've been drumming, you see. This is the kind of idiocy you're hovering around. And at the same time, Trevor's like checking out his new sounds and things like that, and Steve's checking out his other guitars, and they're both looking at each other with a sort of tentative, not fully qualified yet, but they will. They want to work together very closely, and there's that sort of thing going on.
And speaking of Steve Howe, I asked Steve how he came to co-write Union's opening track called I Would Have Waited Forever with John Anderson and producer Jonathan Elias.
John and I both had a stockpile of songs, and we didn't exactly know how we could put these all together. We wanted to. We both had the same desire, you know, to take this and start swapping, developing the Anderson Howe writing team a bit. But Jonathan was really very good at that stage for us, because he just helped balance out whatever John and I didn't know how to balance, you know.
What is his background? I mean, how did Jonathan Elias get involved with ABWH.
Well, I think some time ago, Jonathan was doing a record. Jonathan's album featured quite a few different singers, and I think John sang on one of the tracks. So they met then, and then when 1990 came round and we started to talk about producers who could work with us, Jonathan's name came up, and he'd done Duran Duran, one of their albums, and done a lot of work in New York on different musical projects. So he basically was more like a team man for us, not only in the production sense, but also, as I told you, in the writing, helping to point the direction, because, I mean, John and I can go in multiple directions, and what Jonathan was really doing was homing in on, well, the ABWH style to make it be in line with what he thought ABWH 2 should sound like.
That's called I Would Have Waited Forever from Union, the new album from Yes. Now, when we come back, we'll find out the details of the Yes reunion tour. I'm Red Beard, and we'll be right back with more of our very special world premiere of Union, the brand new album from Yes.
Welcome back to the world premiere of Union. I'm Rick Wakeman of Yes with Red Beard.
Thank you, Rick. What you may have already surmised is that Union, the brand new album from Yes, is actually the union of two separate projects. Four of the tracks were recorded by the so-called Yes West Band of Squire, White, Kay, and Raven, while the remaining 10 tunes were intended to be the second offering from Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, and Howe. Now, to guarantee a sense of continuity, John Anderson has added his vocals to the already finished tracks that the guys in L.A. had done, while Chris Squire sang on several of the ABWH tunes. I asked Tony Kay, Yes keyboard player, what was going through his mind the first time he heard John Anderson's voice where Trevor Raven's had previously been. But Anderson jumped in before Tony had a chance to respond.
Shock. Oh, it's him again.
It was a shock to the system. It was a shock to the system. Him again. No, I mean, it's so natural and so obvious, you know, that it's not a shock at all. You know, it happened 10 years ago almost now, I think, the same thing.
There's definitely
90125,
because we were deja vu to this whole project.
Mm.
We were cinema at that time, and John came in and it, you know, changed the whole validity of it, really, in so many ways. Because, you know, John has the unique voice of the band, and really, it's, you know, that's what it is. And that's really when it becomes Yes, too.
Written in the unmistakable style of Chris Squire, that's Yes with The More We Live, Let Go. From Union, the brand new CD from Yes. Two decades of Yes fans have shared a common fantasy, and it's time we find out about this ultimate Yes reunion tour, which, by the way, touches down in Hartford, Connecticut, Fairfax, Virginia, and Uniondale, New York, over the next few days. With more details, here's Alan White, Steve Howe, Trevor Raven, and Chris Squire of Yes.
Basically, we're just playing one show, I think, in every city for the first leg of the American tour that ends up in Seattle on the 21st of May. And then we go to Europe.
And then we go to Europe. We have to do this in bits.
Well, I'll do the next bit.
Well, after we've finished in America on the 21st of May, yeah, we go to Europe, and that's quite a big one. That's a month of the Germanys, France, not going to Scandinavia, a few places that they're now at war at, like Czechoslovakia. So
another war zone too.
Larry Maggot,
the war zone too.
Somebody will have to sort of find a slightly new venue there. I think we will play on the border. But that takes a whole month, and then we play in England at the end of June.
Right. Then we start again 4th or 5th of July in Miami again, and do a lot of the open-air kind of theaters, finishing in San Francisco again, so we're working east-west again.
One of my most memorable concert experiences was, I believe, the Tormato tour. would have been about 78.
Yeah.
When you played in the round, is there any, a little bird told me there may be a chance for...
That's what we're doing. This tour, it is the round.
Right.
We're going, but certainly the first leg will be, so get your tickets now. The second leg, maybe not the round. This first leg is round, and Europe's going to be in the round. It's fun for us. Bill Bruford's never actually played on a round stage, so he's got a shot coming. Most of us have at one time or another, and it's very, very, very exciting because it is a different experience too, being on static at the end of the hall sort of stage. This is somewhere where the audience hardly have to reach out to sort of
it's
see you.
It's the best.
And there's nowhere to hide.
What configurations and combinations of Yes... personnel will we see in the show?
A complete mixture. There'll be all of us, then there'll be some of us, then there'll be the what we refer to as the Yes West Band, which
Yes
is
West.
The people living in LA, and then the Yes East Band will be the London lot, and we're just going to mix it up a lot as well. You know, there might even be a song where Chris doesn't play on, and there's no substitute bass player.
Yeah, but I took Trevor if he fancy playing bass on a couple of songs, depending how long the concert is. But yes, I'm pretty much Yes Central at the moment.
Yes Central.
As a member of the audience in 1978, Tony Kaye can now vouch for how incredible it is for fans to see Yes live in the round.
Definitely, yeah. There's every seat is a good seat, and I think that... From what I can gather, that the sound, because of the nature of the placement of the speakers, creates you know, better quality of sound. So that's probably a good thing too. But I have been told by various members of the band who did it on Tomato Tour that it's a very strange experience.
Speaking of strange experiences, as keyboard player Rick Wakeman remembers, there are about 20 people who will never, ever forget one such occasion during Yes's 78-79 tour in the round.
There was one night, we did two nights at Chicago at the amphitheater, and I remember one night, for the second night, went on stage, and during the thing, when you're moving, you tend to look at the audience, you don't normally, but we came around, and there was a whole block in the front of one of the parts of about 20 seats that were empty. Now this was very strange, you know, because I knew that the show was sold out. Now, of course, on any show that's sold out, especially if you're talking tens of thousands of people, you're going to get 20 or 30 no-shows. Fact of life. But I thought, this is really weird that there's 20 or 30 no-shows here, but they're all in the front row. This is crazy. Now, we then used to come to the part where Steve Howe played the clap. When he played the clap, we all used to disappear. I used to jump off stage, and I used to go in with where my row crew were. When I went under there, I have never seen so many people in my life. And I said to my guy, I said, what on earth's going on? He said, well, the motor that turns the stage, he said, it's burnt out. He said, so we've taken 20 people from the front two rows, and they were all underneath pushing it round. That's absolutely true, yeah.
What a voice, huh? From Yes's new CD, Union, that shock to the system. Don't go away, because this Union meeting will continue when we return with this very exclusive broadcast of Union, the brand new one, from Yes.
I'm John Anderson of Yes. Welcome to the world premiere of our new album, Union.
Thanks, John. I'm Redbeard. As I said at the beginning of this world premiere special, Yes is an optimistic, hopeful word. And with that in mind, songs like Lift Me Up, Miracle of Life, and Without Hope, You Cannot Start the Day, from the new album Union, illustrate the fact that Yes has always explored the positive rather than the negative side of music. John Anderson, Chris Squire, and Trevor Rabin comment.
I think we were always into sort of uplifting music. You know, I personally didn't follow the Stones into their satanic realm. I followed the Beatles into All You Need Is Love. That was my dream. I loved it, and I tended to follow that train of thought. It's something we're sort of driven to write this kind of music, and it's not even soul searching. It's very spirited music in many ways, and very the love of life, the love and need for understanding, ecology. There's a couple of songs on the new album. Miracle of Life is all about the oceans and what our misunderstanding of what surrounds us. And at the same time, probably around the same time, I was in the south of France writing a song called Take the Water to the Mountain. Let's become alive again. Let's become a part of the Mother Earth. Let's understand that everything that surrounds us is a wonderful experience. And in some ways, all you have to do is to put that into musical form, and you become part and parcel of the people. You're with the people. They want to hear their train of thought put into musical form. That's why they come and see a concert. And we need them to affirm that we're doing the right thing. And the word yes is that affirmation.
I think definitely the yes theme has always been a hopeful one. I think, rather than light and dark, I think we've used dark expressionism in order to show the difference between good and evil, or light and dark, which, you know, whichever way it is. But usually, even if the songs refer to darkness, it's because there's a positive attitude at the end of it, you know.
It's always affirmative.
Yeah.
It's always hopeful.
And it's funny you should mention The Miracle of Life, because yes, I was reading the lyrics the other day in rehearsal, and it's a very positive song. And Trevor's obviously caught the yes disease to an extent, you know, writing.
Well, that's kind of a protest song at the same time, you know. It's about the it's kind of. I was watching CNN's World Report, and there was a thing on in Denmark, what's happening with the dolphins, and just, you know, just slaughtering the dolphins, and it just kind of got to me, and so the verses are kind of a little dark, you know, the sacred life of oceans have been washed away like sand. So it starts off a little dark, but then goes into, you know, lift up to the miracle of life.
Inspired by the ongoing plight of the world's dolphins. That's called The Miracle of Life, and you'll find it on Yes's new compact disc, Union. Up next, we'll hear what the legacy of Yes means to some of the members of the band as we continue with our exclusive world premiere of Union from Yes.
Welcome back to the world premiere of Union. I'm Trevor Raven of Yes with Redbeard.
Thank you, Trevor. In their on-again, off-again career, Yes has always managed to dazzle their multitude of fans, regardless of who was actually in the band at the time. With the opportunity to talk with so many of the players who have been in and out of Yes over the past two decades, I wanted to find out their feelings about the legacy of Yes, the equity, if you will, that's been built up in the name Yes. We'll start with Rick Wakeman.
I said for many years in the early 80s that, because somebody said to me, don't you ever get fed up with being called the ex-keyboard player of Yes? I said, no. I said, because once you're in Yes, you never leave it. You can never leave this band. You might leave in actual bodily terms, but you never leave in spirit. You're always there. You can't help but, but stay in there and watch and notice all the things that happen. And I'm really a punter. My only regret is on this tour is that I won't be able to walk out in the audience and have a listen on occasion, you know.
What a delightful song, and a singer's tour de force. That's Yes's first ever flirtation with a reggae rhythm, written by singer-guitarist Trevor Raven. It's called Saving My Heart, and it comes from the brand new Yes album, Union. Continuing the topic of the legacy of Yes, here's drummer Alan White.
I always try and translate that is that there's always been a kind of egg, as it were, that was a yes that kept rolling on, and people kept leaving and coming back to the situation. And there was another, I'll use it again, pregnant moment in time when Chris and myself were the only members left in the band. And yet we still wrote together and kept the idea of Yes going on. And at that time, if either of us had lost that grip on what Yes was at that time, I think It could have dissipated completely because there wouldn't have been possibly that thing to pull it all back together again. But we held on, as it were, Chris and myself, as speaking from a rhythm section point of view. And then things have just culminated in this event here, which I find very exciting. I think when you see this on stage and everybody being very positive about it and making the music sound the best it possibly can with the people involved, I think it could be the best tour ever we've done.
With the final word on the long and storied history of Yes, here's guitarist Steve Howe.
It's been branched so many times with other groups, and even John's gone out solo once or twice and sung Yes songs, you know. GTR were doing Roundabout, you know, and then ABWH were doing Roundabout, and Yes were doing these songs. So, I mean, really, it's become a sort of big, very big ballpark of Yesness or anything else you can dream up. But I think it's an interchange with an audience. But it's growing, it's changing, so maybe other people are dropping it while other people are finding it. So there's a good balance of Yes equity, Yes Yesness.
From the new Yes CD, Holding On. We'll be right back to our world premiere of Union. You Hold On for more of the new album from Yes. It's been a thrill to share the thoughts and new music of this all-star Yes Union from John Anderson, Chris Squire, Trevor Rabin, Steve Howe, Tony Kaye, Rick Wakeman, Alan White, and Bill Bruford. We'd like to thank all of the following. From East End Management, Tony Dimitriotis, Alex Scott, Rex King, and Brian Lane at Sun Arts Management. At Arista Records, Roy Lott, Tom Ennis, Jay Ziskrow, and David Ross. Logistics by Lori Dubose at WGCX Mobile, Alabama, and Mike Ondaco in Pensacola, Florida. Thanks also to Steve Saslow and June Brody at SJS New York City. In Canada, thanks to Carl Ross at Sound Source Toronto. Station relations by Tommy Nash, Lex Staley, Donna Geisinger, and Vanessa Rocky at the Album Network. Production and editing by Rick R.J. Lane. Written by Jim Nelson. Transcription by Darlene Sizer. Produced by yours truly, Redbeard, and Jim Nelson. The executive producer of the Yes Union World Premiere is Stephen R. Smith.
And we hope you did enjoy the world premiere of Union from Yes. Give us a buzz. Let us know what you thought of the new album, 212-955-WNAW. We still have Todd Rundgren tickets to give out. We have a mid...